like center net.
All kinds of excitement going on there.
Scores! Roll the highlight reel. 6-0 Flames.
You can't put it in the wind column.
Yeah, baby, yeah, baby, yeah, baby.
This is Flames Talk with Pat Steinberg and Aaron Vickers on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
All right, let's get another hour of Flames Talk going. It is Wednesday, April 2nd, and we're underway from our Groundworks downtown studio. My name is Pat Steinberg with Aaron Vickers of NHL.com, and welcome to the Sports Drive brought to you by Calgary Lock and Safe. Did you know that barrier-free access doors are required for commercial entrances and public washrooms? Are you compliant? Visit CalgaryLockandSafe.com. We're available on Apple, Spotify, Amazon, Seeker, or wherever you get your podcasts. And, of course, text line is open for you at 960-960 if you're listening live here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. It is a Wednesday. Say hello to Vix. Hi, buddy.
Don't mind me. I'm just rocking to the beats.
As you should be. I had a bit of a dance party before we
literally
popped on the hour. And no stranger to dance parties herself is the color voice of the Calgary Flames. Megan Mickelson joins us to kick off this hour on Flames Talk. A little midweek Mickelson on this Wednesday. Hi, Mick. How are we doing?
Hiya, fellas. I'm doing good. Back from Utah and doing laundry and all the things because I realized that we leave again in like 4 days.
Yeah, so. Exactly.
But I'm doing good.
quick little two-game homestand and then back on the road to California and then back home. It's a strange final 8 games, but every second day go the Flames between now and April 17th when the season comes to an end 2 weeks from this Thursday. Okay, let's just get into it. You know, the game against Edmonton on Saturday, bit of a gut punch. Leon Draisaitl takes over, wins it in overtime. They go into Denver. They're down 2-0 after 40. They look completely outmatched. They score 2 goals in 32 seconds thanks to their fourth line and win it in a shootout. Pretty improbable comeback and a huge 2 points. Then the third game in 4 nights into Utah on Tuesday. Again, they fall down 2-0 early in the second, claw their way back on the Rasmus Andersson goal, but can't find the equalizer and lose 3-1. Guys, what do we think of the effort in Utah, especially as it was following up that win in Colorado on Monday?
Yeah, I think for me, like I give the group a lot of credit, like for the way that they continue to, you know, they're down in games and we saw it in Colorado and saw it again in Utah, like no matter what, they find ways to fight and claw their way back into games and within a goal in the case of last night's game. So, you know, I thought that, you know, that was something that's obviously a really big takeaway, but you know, I think at this point, and if you look at the road trip as a whole, the biggest issue for me was not playing a full 60 minutes. And, you know, I know that there's going to be momentum swings in games. I know that there's going to be, you know, periods of time where the other team has, you know, some offensive zone time and you're not dominating the game from start to finish. But the lapses that we've seen and that we saw over the course of this road trip, like in Edmonton, I think they let a point slip away because they let their play drop off in the last 5 to 6 minutes of that game. I think that, and I think we would all agree, like they got pretty lucky in Colorado, the way that everything ended up turning out and having your fourth line come through. But for the first 40 minutes, just looked, you know, pretty discombobulated, a solid push and a great finish, obviously. But it was sort of the same sort story in Utah that we saw in Colorado. And it was, you know, again, the first 40 minutes. And then you go to make a push the last 20, which is amazing. But at the end of the day, you need to play a much more complete effort in a game like that. Especially, I mean, when the stakes are so high, coming off the game in Colorado, which was a really fast-paced game, that was something Ryan Huska talked about in that game, was they had a hard time adjusting to the pace of the Avalanche. They did in the third period. And that he wanted the team to start the game in Utah the same way that they finished, or with the same pace, because Utah, a very similar team, he said, to Colorado, but just younger. And we just didn't see that off the start. So, you know, for me, I think that that's probably the biggest takeaway from that game. I love the push. I love the resilience. I love the belief. I love that they never go away. You know, I think that it's something easier said than done. They continue to show that they're going to fight right until the end, but would like to see them play a more complete game at this point when the stakes are this high.
Yeah, it's been a bit of an emotional roller coaster of late, and I wonder if there was a little letdown after that Colorado win. Second of back-to-backs, I get that, but from my perspective, I didn't see that urgency that you're talking about right from the drop of the puck, and it's a tough hole to dig yourself out of when you go down 2-0 on the road in the second of back-to-backs. But I'm not going to lie, when Anderson scores midway through the second period, you go, okay, they're just going to go do it again. Just weren't able to ever find that second goal. And yeah, they managed to ramp their game up the further that game went along. Good push once the emotional level grew in the game, the engagement level grew, especially in that third period. For all intents and purposes, it was a one-goal game on the second of back-to-backs against a team they've historically struggled against. There aren't any moral victories right now that you're going to take away from a game like that, and it's 2 points you let slip away that you're running out of runway to gather points. So the focus has to be, again, right from puck drop against the Anaheim Ducks, you've got to get going right away because there is no margin for error anymore after losing the second of back-to-backs in Utah.
Yeah, I mean, the circumstances made it so they were going to be behind the eight ball, third and four, second half back-to-back travel, all that type of stuff. I don't think we're surprised that, you know, that there were stretches there where they looked gassed and there were stretches there, Mick, where they looked like they were a tired group and playing a team that was a whole lot fresher. And here's the other thing is that, you know, that's a desperate Utah team, right? Like Utah's very similar to Calgary in that, you know, people on the outside might say, oh, they're done, don't think about them. But inside that room, Andre Tournier has the same belief that Ryan Huska's got inside that Flames room. Utah moved within 2 points of Calgary with the win on Tuesday. So, you know, I think Colorado went into cruise control in the third period on Monday, and you know they're home and cool. They know what they're playing for, and I really feel like there was a little bit of a, okay, let's just see if we can nurse this one home, and you know we're trying to conserve, and they have a 2-0 lead, and so they kind of put it into cruise control, and Calgary can't do that. They came out with an urgent effort, and they bit the abs, and to their credit, won the game, and good on them. But Utah couldn't afford that. They weren't going to go into cruise control with a one-goal lead. And, you know, they were a team that had dominated the first 30, 35 minutes of that hockey game, had a well-earned 2-1 lead. And they, you know, even though they were on their heels for almost the entirety of the third, they really bared down themselves and made sure that they came away with the regulation victory. And so, you know, that kind of, you're not always going to be able to mount the comeback. It's what we talked about on postgame, right, Mick, is that it's awesome that they're able to do this. And even what you just said, we love the resilience and we love how they never wave the white flag. But sometimes you want to be in a situation where you don't even have to think about waving the white flag, or like you're trying to make the other team quit. And it just recently, there has not been a lot of the Flames being in control. So they've got a team below them in the standings on Thursday. Maybe they can do that at the Dome.
Well, and you know, it's kind of what Morgan Frost said post game with Wilsey. You know, it sort of, to me, you know, he said it without saying it. It's, you know, you're probably pretty tired of trying to chase the game all the time. And he did say, like, you know, we need to start playing with a lead. It is an exhausting way to play when you're constantly trying to chase the game. And, you know, I think, like, the other thing for me, the game in Utah, back-to-backs are so weird with travel, without travel, whatever it is. Like, I've had games where you end up feeling better on the second half of a back-to-back than you end up feeling on the first half of a back-to-back. Like, and for some crazy physiological reason, you can feel better physically the second day when you should be more tired, but you're not. And then other times you are completely gassed in that second game. So, you know, it's always hard to tell too. Like, I look back to the games in Toronto and then against the Rangers and that back-to-back. And I mean, they came out against the Rangers just absolutely flying. So to me, that was like a prime example of, okay, maybe they felt better in that second game. And then, you know, this back-to-back, it was the opposite. They looked tired. So that's the other thing for me is you could do all the same things and then just feel completely different for whatever reason it is on the ice. But yeah, it's a hard way to play, and they need to, I think, you know, the next stretch here, start trying to score first, play with the lead, extend the lead, hold the lead, because, you know, mentally, physiologically, psychologically, it's just a lot easier way to play.
Well, 8 games to go now, and a big time setback for sure. They are in a spot where, you know, they've got a large mountain to climb here between now and the end of the regular season. They're essentially 7 points back of Minnesota with 1 game in hand, and 8 points back of St. Louis with 2 games in hand. They've got a massive uphill climb, and you know, the Blues pulling it out of the fire on Tuesday again and winning their 10th in a row, and Calgary in a regulation loss losing in Utah. That's definitely a setback, and you know, after maybe that hill got a little less steep after Monday's win, Mick, it's back to being a pretty steep climb after Tuesday. But you know, we also talked about this on postgame. Now, that this group's belief is pretty incredible and pretty unshakable. What's important for this group to make sure that what happened on Tuesday doesn't derail them, once again doesn't derail them, like so many other knocks haven't derailed them this season?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think, you know, what you just said is so many knocks haven't derailed them. So I, you know, I have, you know, confidence that this one won't. I do think, I mean, you're playing against the Anaheim Ducks, and that to me is a must win game tomorrow night. So I think, you know, so long as you come out in that game and you have a strong start, and if they're able to get to their game early, score a couple of goals, then I think you're right back on track. But I think that's really key, is making sure that they come out strong, that they have a really good start, and that they score the first and, you know, maybe even the second goal. So I think that, you know, yes, it's a setback, but at the same time, you know, my mindset as a player would be like, you can only focus on the things that you can control. And that's so cliche, but at the end of the day, you don't know, like St. Louis, how many has St. Louis won in a row now?
10.
Just the 10. No big deal.
Just 10. Okay. Well, maybe they could go on a losing streak. Like, who knows? If it's crazy that they've gone on a 10 game winning streak, well, they can lose a whole bunch in a row too. Same with Minnesota. So at the end of the day, you know, if that were to happen, the Flames, I mean, if they can string some wins together here, then the script flips very, very quickly with a win or a couple of wins. So I don't think it's going to derail them. I don't think it's going to throw them off too much. I do think that a loss tomorrow night, Thursday night, I think that would throw them off quite a bit. Like if you start stringing a couple losses together, then I think you really take a hit. But if you come out strong, play a really good game, win another one, then you can kind of keep rolling from there.
Yeah, and for me, I feel like this reset for that group has already started. You can't look back at this point in the season. There's only one thing to focus on, as you mentioned, Mick, and that's the next team that they'll face. You can't afford yourself to let any doubt creep in at this point of the season. I don't think that's been an issue for this group, as you guys have mentioned. We haven't seen any signs of that whatsoever through the first, 74 games of the season. But you have to be a goldfish in this situation. But that goes whether you win or lose. You can't get too low on your losses. And again, we're tossing out some cliches here. Can't get too low when you lose. Can't get too high when you win. But again, like the group that we've seen play through 6 months of this season has been exactly that kind of mentality where, okay, well, something didn't go our way. Well, then we'll just go out the next time and make sure it does. So it's been a very goldfishy team where you got to have a short memory and just move on to the next one.
Yeah, I mean, they've done a very, very good job. And, you know, Ryan Huska's been talking about this. I remember some of the answers that he was giving us, Mick, back in October about the season and how, like, it was always about only what's coming up next, only what's coming up next. And he's, I think that's been a focus for this group right from the get-go is, you know, really focusing on flushing bad or good after you're done. You know, you take some time to think about the good. Like he said it a few times after some of these pretty spectacular wins, the New Jersey or the Colorado wins come to mind recently, even the Islanders wins. Okay, yeah, enjoy this. Like, enjoy what you just did. That was a really fun win, and you should enjoy it for the rest of the night. And then as soon as you wake up the next morning, that's gone because there's still a ton of work in front of you. And the same is true about what happened on Tuesday night. Yeah, it sucks. And the out-of-town result sucks. And all of it was no good. But okay, yeah, you can be upset about it or frustrated about it and think about what you could do better coming out of that game. And then as soon as you wake up to travel on Wednesday, you're focused on Thursday's game against Anaheim and getting right back to it. And that has been, like, if you go down the strengths, Mick, of what this team's what this team has been able to put together this year and why they are where they are still in the at the beginning of April, their ability to focus on the next task in hand and not let good or bad what has happened prior affect them going forward has been one of those things. I'd put it right at the top of the list. So why would it change now would be my question.
Yeah. And I mean, you look at the alternative option to, you know, turning the page and continuing to push and be your best. Like, what are you going to do? Sit around and pout and sulk? And just show up to the rink miserable every day and think, okay, we're just going to, you know, ride this season out and, you know, 8 games left and, you know, it's almost over. I just don't think that mindset is not in that locker room. And even looking at, you know, the way that they played in the third period against Utah, like there was a couple of guys and leaders in that room, I would say, like Blake Coleman really stood out to me as like, he was feisty and really like, spicy and edgy. And I thought Jonathan Huber, like, it almost looked like they were ticked off. So to me, they're not just going to roll over and feel bad for themselves. The leadership in that room has been too good all season long. Those guys are way too competitive. They're not going to let the team fold. They're going to continue to fight.
We're chatting with Megan Mickelson. The color voice of the Flames is joining us here on Flames Talk. It's a little midweek chat with Mick. Always great to kick a few topics around. Or maybe this is a good way to wrap it up and kind of tie everything that we've just spoken about in a bow, friends. And you know, we played the clip on Tuesday's show going into the Utah game and coming off the Colorado comeback. And Elliot Friedman had said on the Fan Hockey Show, essentially said, you know what, whatever happens, if the Flames end up missing and if they don't end up in the playoffs when it's all said and done, this season still means a lot. And this season still was a very positive year. The attitude around the organization, the vibe inside that room, guys wanting to be a part of this organization and be in the city. Like, these are all really important things that have been established this year, and a new identity has been established. Is that, do we all agree that with that sentiment that says, hey, whether they end up making it and pull off the crazy comeback down the stretch or not, that this has been a really important season for the big picture of this group?
No, it's been massive. And you look at or you think about, you know, even heading into not this season, but last season, and the changes that they wanted to make was like the culture and the environment, you know, in the locker room with that team. And I really think that this season, it sort of solidified, you know, what this group is all about. And every single building that we walk into when we're on the road, every single coach that we talk to, pretty much every single player that we talk to on opposing teams as well, you know, the Flames are now known around the league as being a really hard team to play against, a hardworking, physical team that won't go away. So not only have they established just a much better culture and environment, which, you know, starts with your leadership, your coach, your GM, and then your leadership group. So not only have they taken another step in that regard, for me, they've really, you know, established what the identity of their team is, kind of just at its core. Like, obviously there's going to be changes next season, you know, lineup, whatever it may be. But I think that, at the core of this group, they've solidified who they are and how they want to be known around the league. So, I mean, I think it's massive. I give the group a ton of credit for what they've been able to accomplish right from the get-go. It's just been a really impressive team to watch. And, I said this to Kelly Rudy yesterday morning when we were chatting, and it was right before media availability, and him and I were sitting there and talking about like the teams that we've played on or teams that we've watched over the years, teams that we've seen, like have we ever seen a more resilient group or a team that fights as hard as this group does? And both of us were like, we couldn't think of a team. So between Kelly Rudy and myself, we could not think of a team that we had played for or that we had ever seen, over the course of our careers or broadcasting careers that were as resilient as this team is. So I think that really says something. I think that regardless of how the season ends, they've made just massive strides, leaps and bounds in just, really starting to establish the team that they're going to be in the future and down the road, and building a foundation that they can work off of to hopefully eventually become a Stanley Cup contending team.
Yeah, and Mick, you said it, the big word for me this season is culture. Regardless of outcome, whether they make the playoffs or not, it's been a very tone-setting, culture-setting season, and it ingrains in your younger generation of players what hard work and determination can do, regardless of what anybody thinks externally. It sets a bar, it sets a standard, it sets an expectation internally. And most important from my perspective, and this might rile up Team Tank a little bit, but it teaches the young players, the next generation, when the core six or the core seven, including Ryan Lomberg, aren't around anymore, it teaches that young group to pick up that mantle and have that attitude, have that mantra that losing isn't acceptable regardless of circumstance, which I think is absolutely important for a team as it continues to shift younger and younger season in, season out.
Yeah, I think that this is one of those years that, look, I really do get it. Like, I really do get where some fans are coming from when they say, ugh, they're going to finish in the middle of the pack again and give up that pick, and they lose their pick to Montreal. Like, I do get the frustration, and I understand that this team has been mired in that for two decades with an outlier here or an outlier there. But generally, this has been a team that has, just been right in the middle, and that a lot of fans are tired of that and would like to see that change. But I keep on saying, and I get that, but I keep on saying there's, for the first time, there's mitigating factors. Number one, Craig Conroy is building this to be a group that is not just focused on this season. And just because they have exceeded expectations this year doesn't mean that Craig Conroy's big picture plan has changed, because I can tell you beyond a shadow of a doubt, it hasn't changed. The eye on the prize and the 3 to 5 year plan is still what they're working towards, regardless of the results this season. And that 3 to 5 year plan includes getting younger and building to be a team with these young players that's really ready to compete at a higher level when the new building opens. That's number one. And the other thing that I'd say, Mick, is that they're in the quote unquote mushy middle this year. Yes, because of what Nazem Kadri's done and how he's taken this team on his back at times. And yes, the resurgent season of Jonathan Huberdeau and an incredible year that probably isn't getting enough attention on the back end from Mackenzie Weegar, but it's also on the backs of Dustin Wolf as a rookie 23-year-old goaltender and a massive part of your future. It's also with Matt Coronato being one of three 20-goal scorers and one of the youngest 20-goal scorers in the organization's history. And Connor Zary continues to develop. And Kevin Ball is still just 24 years old and in his first year at this type of role. And so there's a mitigating factor to this year, even if they do just miss the playoffs and end up being in the middle of the pack when it comes to their draft pick. This year, it's different for me because they're clearly going in a different direction, and the pieces that are going to kind of lead the way in that new direction have also been significant driving forces in their success this year.
Well, yeah, that's the other piece too. And like Vix, you mentioned it, the younger guys learning just about, you know, the culture and how they want to set that up. It's also the experience that the younger players have gotten, the experience of playing in, you know, such close games and being a part of a playoff push, having, you know, the time and the games to gain experience, to really develop their games. You know, you think about where Matt Coronato was at the beginning of this season and where he is now. Like, you're telling me that that's not massive where he started and, you know, where he's gotten to as a key future piece of this organization. And he's just one example. Dustin Wolf as well. And a lot of the guys that you mentioned, Pat, it's the development of the players in this organization, the young guys, that has been really, really important in the big picture as well. I think that that's a massive takeaway for me.
Did you everything get, was that the microwave going off?
I don't know what that was going on.
Oh, okay. We thought
that
we
could be concerning then.
I don't know.
We were wondering if maybe like you were taking something out of the microwave. Yeah. So
as long as it's all Amazon truck backing up,
who knows?
I'm in my office. I don't know what that was.
Okay.
It was short lived, so I just let it go.
Okay. Get out of here, friend. We will see you at Morning Skate on Thursday for the Flames and Ducks. Thanks as always, Mick.
All right, thanks, guys.
Megan Mickelson is the color voice of the Calgary Flames. She joins us to kick off this hour. She joins us on Wednesdays here on Flames Talk, and she joins us at Steinberg and Vickers along with you, too, on the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline, serving the best pizza, pasta, steaks, and ribs for over half a century. Dine in at 6060 Memorial Drive Northeast or call 403-248-3344 for pickup or delivery.
You're locked on Flames Talk, only on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Want to read this text at 960-960 as we continue along on this Wednesday edition of Flames Talk. Steinberg and Vickers. Pat, great to see Suniyev sign and report to the Flames today. He's been my favorite prospect since he was drafted. A strong skater with a fantastic release, and you can just see the offensive instincts in his game. Byron Bader is one of the best prospect models out there. Even listed Jake DeBrusk as a comparable in terms of Suniyev's year-to-year growth and projection, and that's a pretty exciting outlook. Suniyev and Gridin give me real high potential vibes, but especially Suniyev. I think he has all the tools to become a very productive middle six sniper at the NHL level. Can't wait to see what he can do in a Flames jersey. What's your take on his upside? That's on the text line at 960-960. I read that because on this Wednesday, the Flames have signed Idar Suniyev, third-round pick in the 2023 draft. He was the third-round pick the Flames acquired a couple days prior in the Tyler Toffoli trade. They signed him to his three-year entry-level deal. So a few things here. Number one, I agree on the upside. There's a lot of people who really have taken notice of this kid's NHL-level shot and how he's been able to use it at the NCAA level. 20 goals as a sophomore, 38 points in 35 games. So I do think the upside, Vix, on Suniyev is really, really exciting. So I agree on that front. Very similar sophomore numbers to Matt Coronato coming out of college.
Near identical.
And different players, but similar roles, I think, in terms of how they project in the NHL. Like, I think Suniyev's more of a dynamic guy in terms of the way he skates and gets his shot away. And maybe Coronado's work ethic and kind of that he's nicknamed the Bison because of the way he plays, right? And you
straight line and through guys.
And really, an underrated two-way game in Matt Coronato that maybe doesn't get enough love in terms of how that started to translate to the NHL. But I think there's some real potential in Suniyev, and that's why the Flames put on a pretty full court press to get him signed. So Suniyev's season ended at UMass over the weekend when they went out to Western Michigan, I think, in their second round game at the Frozen Four or the NCAA hockey tournament. And so since his season came to an end as a sophomore, the Flames have been engaged with the Suniyev camp and really been trying to get him to sign. And the impetus for the Flames to really get this done is the fact that he could do the 4 years UFA route like other college players have, and the Flames didn't want to lose this player. And the minute that a guy goes back from a sophomore to a junior season, that's when alarm bells start to very slightly get rung. Remember when Johnny went back for a third year? Now, Johnny went back to play with his brother, which, you know, is heart-wrenching to talk about. But when Johnny decided to go back for a junior season, that was the reason why. And still had Flames fans pretty riled, pretty kind of riled up and worried that he wasn't going to come. Well, obviously we know what happened. Craig Conroy flew down and got him to come, and he and Bill Arnold made their debut after his junior season. But as soon as a guy goes back for the junior season, then they're only one more year away from becoming an unrestricted free agent, and it becomes that much more attractive to them. And so that's why they put on the full court press to try to get Matt Coronato after his sophomore year 2 years ago. And that's why they put on a pretty good full court press on Suniev to get him to come out this year after his sophomore season. And that's why they're burning the first year of his entry level deal. So the first, a lot of people wonder, like, why would you burn? Why would you sign a deal that burns his entry level deal? Why wouldn't you just ATO him, which is the amateur tryout, and have him in the American League the rest of the year, and then have his three-year contract kick in next year? Well, the reason is because that's not as attractive to the players' camp when the players' camp has a slight bit of leverage. So to kind of push it over the hump, the Flames eventually relented and said, yeah, okay, we'll burn the first year of the entry level, essentially turn it into a two-year deal, get you the NHL money right away, prorated for the rest of the season, burn that first year. And if that's what gets us over the hump, we want the player that bad that will do it. And I think that's the biggest message here. The Flames really wanted to make sure, A, they kept the player, B, they got the player from college where they don't have their people working with him into the organization as soon as possible. So now they have Ray Edwards and his development staff and the ability for the organization to be the ones working with Suniev. And that is another big reason, and an opportunity now for him to fight and, you know, be in the mix for NHL games as early as this season, which we'll get to, but, you know, for more of a full-time basis when he starts to really make the transition to full-time pro hockey next year. So all those things combined, that's why Suniev's burning the first year of his entry-level deal. I don't think that was, and the word that I had got initially is that the Flames were hoping maybe that wouldn't be the case, but they decided to go down that road to ensure the contract got signed. The contract got signed. They're super excited to have him, and now they get an opportunity to start working with him right away.
Well, and to be perfectly honest, I'm sitting here from the outside looking in. I'm not a member of the organization, but from a team perspective, I don't necessarily hate burning that first year either, because I don't necessarily know if this is, and this will be on Suniev to prove me wrong or to put in the work over the summer, but I don't know if he's necessarily a full-time NHLer when he plays his first pro season. We saw Matt Coronato come, try to make the jump, needed a little bit more seasoning. So by the time Suniev does, in theory, hit an NHL roster, okay, well, you burn the first year this year. Year two, maybe spent primarily in the AHL. Year three, okay, he becomes a full-time member of the Flames. He doesn't have a full track record of multiple seasons of being an impact maker at the NHL level to command significant leverage on that next deal. Whereas if you push it, okay, year one of the deal starts next season. Okay, maybe that's the minor league year that he spends there. And then he's got 2 full years of perhaps doing what Matt Coronato has done this year in terms of being a 20-goal scorer in your first full season in the NHL. And then, okay, where does he go from there? Does he go 20 goals, 25?
It's a double-edged sword, right?
But I don't necessarily hate it from a team perspective where you're giving the player less runway to really hamstring. And if he does manage to hamstring you in terms of, oh, he made an immediate impact and he's only got 2 years, that's a great thing from a Flames perspective. That is not a bad problem to have, that this guy came, showed up maybe earlier than expected and suddenly commands more dollars. That's just helping you do what you want to do from a team perspective even more.
The one side is you essentially only get him on his entry-level contract for
2 years.
But the flip side is, or the positive side from a team standpoint, is what you just talked about. Frank talked about it in the first hour on this Wednesday as well, that he's got less runway to build up the leverage and build up the body of work to suggest his next contract he's going to hit it big. I mean, hell, even Matt Coronato, who's due a new contract this summer, you know, probably is going to get bridged, and his camp's probably okay with the bridge, because hey, he's really had the one full season. Last year was spent primarily in the minors, and this is the year that he's really started to pop. So he doesn't have two 20-goal NHL seasons. He has one 20-goal NHL season, which makes it a little bit harder to maybe set a long-term number. So, there's definitely both sides to the coin. But I do think what pushed this, my understanding is what pushed this over the top from the Suniev camp is the ability to get that first year burnt right away, to get your entry level. Because the reason why people want the entry level deal burnt, why agents and players want that burnt as soon as possible, is because entry level deals are the only ones that are capped. There's an entry level maximum salary that you can hit, and you can't go over. Like Suniev couldn't. They didn't have the option to say, hey, we'll throw $3 million at you. Well, you can't do that because there's a entry level cap on it. So that's why players, or one of the main reasons why agents and players want to get through, blow through the ELC as soon as possible, is so that they can start making quote unquote real money sooner rather than later. So the incentive for the player to get NHL money for the rest of this year, he won't see the American League the rest of this year, and
ineligible for the playoffs.
Exactly. And has the potential to play NHL games. Yeah, I think that was incentive enough to get him to sign. I think that changed over the last 24, 48 hours, and the Flames were kind of like, we really want to get this guy signed. Yeah. We'll go down that road.
Yeah, if that's what you've got to do from a Flames perspective to have the peace of mind when you're trying to sign a college player that, he would have had to spend two more years at UMass in order to hit unrestricted free agency. But if you're the Flames, and as you mentioned, you get into that junior season, and that's when the questions start popping up, and that's when the timelines become, well, if I only spent one more year, one calendar year still remaining in college, then I can have my pick of 32 teams. That's enticing for a player. So if you're the Flames and you have to sacrifice signing that deal now and getting him a year early, if you will, in turn from a contract perspective, mm-hmm. so be it.
And a little bit more good news related to Suniev, related to the rest of the season. So here's your latest playoff odds at the two places that we like to check. One of them decides to load at about 1999 internet speed, and the other one is working. So here over at HockeyRef, the site that's working currently, St. Louis up to 94.3% on their playoff odds. Minnesota up to 90%. Calgary down to 10.7%. And Vancouver down to 5% on their playoff odds. They were similar over at Money Puck, but I just can't get
I've got them here if you need it. It loaded very fine for me.
Very nice for you. Then what do we have for their odds?
St. Louis, 92.7. Minnesota, 88.2. Flames down to 12 even. Vancouver, 6.7.
Okay. So those are, the uphill climb got more steep after what happened on Tuesday.
No doubt
about that. The Flames are fully committed to fighting this playoff fight till the very end, as they should be. And you, if you're the Flames right now, if you're Craig Conroy and management, if you're Ryan Huska and the coaching staff, you want as many of the remaining eight games on your schedule to be meaningful. You want to be playing meaningful hockey right to the very end, and they're going to try to sneak their way into the playoffs, as they should. That's the goal. And Ryan Huska is going to continue to ice the best lineup that he feels most comfortable with to win that game on any single night. However, the minute they become officially eliminated, if that happens, their elimination number is down to 5 on Minnesota, 4.5 on St. Louis, or 10 points on Minnesota, 9 on St. Louis. The minute if they do end up getting officially eliminated, or if it becomes fait accompli that they're going to become eliminated, then I do think we're going to see Suniev play. I think that we will see Suniev play NHL games if that circumstance arises. I think that we would see William Stromgren potentially get some NHL games, make his debut. Maybe Jan Kuznetsov gets back into some NHL games. Wouldn't be his debut, but it would be his season debut. So you have, there's some excitement there, getting a chance to see Suniev, getting a chance to see Stromgren perhaps. Maybe a Sam Morton gets a game if that's the case. I do think that they will really give the opportunity to some of the young players. And then the last name that you would be excited about is Zane Parekh. They I think it's safe to say the Flames are trying to fast track Parekh as soon as they can. They want Parekh to be as ready as possible to be in the NHL next year because they understand better than Vix or I do that the OHL makes no sense. Parekh is...
Like, what do you want him to go? Put up 150 points? What good does that do?
He's got 6 points in 3 playoff games already as Saginaw's down 1-2 to Erie in that best of 7. So they're trying to fast track Parekh too, and so if the opportunity arises and Saginaw does go out in round one, they're down 2-1. If that happens, then I think that, again, if the Flames are out, that we'll get a chance to see Zane Parekh in an NHL game or two as well. So I guess my point is that the fight to the finish hopefully remains as exciting as humanly possible from a Flames standpoint, even with long odds. Hopefully they make this as good a push as possible, and we're talking about lots of meaningful games left of the 8. And if at any point the games become quote-unquote meaningless, I think there's a little excitement that gets thrown into the mix by getting an opportunity to see the likes of Suniev, of Parekh, of Stromgren, so on and so forth. So I guess there's still plenty of reason to keep the interest high in the Flames between now and the end of the regular season.
And just a thought on Parekh, like, what more does this guy need to do at the OHL level? Yes, I understand that he could further round out his defensive game, but to a point, like, he's got 2 of the 3 highest scoring seasons in the OHL from a defenseman since 1994-95, Ryan Ellis being the other. What else is there to learn?
94-95 was Jamie Rivers, right?
I'm not certain. I can go back and have
I'm
a quick
pretty
look.
Pretty sure Jamie Rivers had like 122 points in 94-95.
Might be 93-94.
It was 93-94. Yep, 121 points with Sudbury in the OHL with Jamie Rivers.
So go back 30 years. Parekh already has 2 of the top 3 offensive seasons.
Good stuff. Aaron Vickers on Twitter at AA Vickers. My name is Pat Steinberg. Shan Vergy, Cam Hughes have been our outstanding producers this hour. As we start to wrap it up, this hour has been the Sports Drive brought to you by Calgary Lock and Safe. Did you know that barrier-free access doors are required for commercial entrances and public washrooms? Are you compliant? Visit CalgaryLockAndSafe.com.